The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition. Well,
one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Wednesday, October 13th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live and direct from beautiful Potland, Oregon, and Rolla J Studios. Also coming to you from our virtual studios in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and quarter sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Maybe we should call it Grassoria, Oregon. I want a cool nickname like Portland has.
Yeah, I guess we could. How you doing today, Carrie?
Good. It's gorgeous out here today. A beautiful Indian summer day, and I wish you all were here with me today because it's beautiful.
Yeah, and of course, those of you waiting to hear from Ganja John, you probably already know that Ganja John is off probably the rest of this month. He just had kidney transplant surgery, and he seems to be doing okay. He went home for a little while and then had to go back to the hospital, was having some pain, but I think he'll get back home today as well, and hopefully he'll call us during our second hour. Also, speaking of the second hour, I wanted to make a note to some folks out there. I get an email every now and then from people who only listen to this show via the podcast on iTunes, where it's called the Normal Daily Audio Stash, and they say, where's the podcast for hour two? There is no podcast for hour two. Hour one is the podcast. Hour two is our live show. If you want to hear hour two, you got to tune in live to stickem.com/normalshowlive, or just go to live.normal.org. Well, goodness, Carrie. Something moving in there? You got a truck bursting in or something?
No, it's a big airplane flying overhead.
I see. Okay. Well,
Carrie, on top of the mic here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break. So, Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, today we're going to go to the progressive, yes, I said it, the progressive state of Arizona. We're also going to talk about a case that the Supreme Court won't be hearing. And for our Health Wednesday, I've got a show about, or a news story about baby boomers and their senior parents.
All right. Sounds like good stuff. We'll talk to you a little bit later, right after this first break. Also on today's show, we have our Daily Toker Tunes and our new Irie Wednesday music editor, Grateful Dread Public Radio, is bringing us today's tune, an Italian reggae tune, which should be quite interesting. Also, speaking of music editors, Eric Smokesbud, our Friday music editor, just emailed me today to let me know that unfortunately he has to resign being our Friday music editor. He's got family business to attend to, so we are now looking for a new volunteer Rockin' Friday music editor. If you'd like to bring us the best of rock, metal, jam band music, punk, with regard to marijuana or legalization, please send me an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll tell you all you need to know about becoming our volunteer music editor. It's one of the most fun ways you can contribute to the end of marijuana prohibition. We've also got today, it's our Cannabis Science Day with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. He'll be joining us live, taking your calls and your questions via chat. Well, anything about science, health, culture, whatever you want to know about pot, Dr. Mitch can tell you. And at the end of the show, a little bit of radical ranting. I'm going to talk about Measure 74, the measure to bring dispensaries to my home state of Oregon. All that and more coming up on Normal
Show
Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's NORML News with Cannabis Carrie.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal from a convicted Mississippi marijuana dealer on Tuesday. Lorenzo Tarver was sentenced in 2006 for possession of marijuana with intent to distribute. Tarver was caught back in 2004. LaFleur County Police found 69.9 pounds of cannabis in Mr. Tarver's home when they showed up with a search warrant. A confidential informant had told police there was a large amount of marijuana, money, and a gun in Tarver's home in Greenwood, Mississippi. When it came time for the trial 2 years later, the marijuana evidence was missing from the evidence vault. Tarver was arguing that the state's comments during the trial referencing the missing marijuana were highly prejudicial and suggested that Tarver's attorneys were responsible for the disappearance of the evidence. In 2006, the judge sentenced Lorenzo Tarver to 60 years in prison for his crimes. Under Mississippi state law, the maximum penalty for possession of more than 2.2 pounds of marijuana is 30 long years in prison. The trial judge then doubled the maximum sentence of 30 years because Tarver's house was within 1,500 feet of a daycare center. The Mississippi Court of Appeals upheld his conviction along with his 60-year sentence in 2009. Now, this news is not very good for Mr. Tarver. The Supreme Court is petitioned with about 7,000 to 8,000 cases every year and only agrees to hear about 200 of them. Mr. Tarver was also ordered to pay a $100,000 fine.
Wow. Every time I hear a story like this where someone is sentenced to multiple decades behind bars for marijuana, it always makes me go to the Google and look up the statistics for other average sentences for, you know, basic crimes in the United States. You know, the average sentence for murder being, you know, around 14, 15 years, for rape being, you know, 7 to 10 years, all these different averages you can come up with. And every time you look at them, you find that the averages for the most heinous crimes in America are far less than what we give people as mandatory sentences for the trafficking and selling of marijuana. The trafficking and selling of marijuana, which adults wanted to buy from other adults in most cases we're talking about here, when we're talking about those large-scale dealer rings like this. And we currently, in the United States, have the world's largest prison system. We have more people in prison in the United States of America, both per capita and overall, than any country in the world. Yeah, it's quite amazing. The Chinese come in second place, I believe, but you gotta understand, we've got like 4 or 5% of the world's population, yet we have 23 to 24% of the world's inmates. Yeah, the land of the free. And China, a place with 1.3 billion people, 1.4 billion people, only has 16% of the world's imprisoned. right? So even per capita, it's less, but even overall, it is less. We have 2.3 million people behind bars. The Chinese have 1.6 million people behind bars versus their 1 billion, 1.4 billion population. Here in America, we have about a 300 million population. We got 2.3 million of them locked up. Less than one out of 100 people in America is locked up in this country. It is a shame. It is a travesty. And we can only look at the drug sentences as why these numbers have gone up so drastically. I have this great graph, and I don't have it available on the webcam right now, but a great graph of how many people that were incarcerated in the United States by decade. And when you look at the 1900s, 1910, 20, 30, 40, 50, all of those years, there's a slight increase, but that increase pretty much matches the increase in population. But when you hit the 60s, and especially the 70s, when you hit Richard Nixon declaring the war on drugs, and most pronounced in the 80s, when we started seeing all those mandatory minimum sentences that the Congress of Tip O'Neill got through to us, you see the rates for incarceration skyrocket as compared to all the previous decades. It's all about the war on drugs, and what that's all about is warehousing human beings, taking poor people out of the cities, warehousing them out in the country, and hiring poor people in the country to guard them. It's got to end, and it's got to start to end by passing Prop 19 in California.
Arizona, a forward-thinking state, immigration aside, on many issues. They passed a medical marijuana tax months ago before the citizens of the state even had a chance to vote on Prop 203 that is upcoming on the November 2nd ballot. Now the Arizona League of Cities and Towns is warning all Arizona municipalities statewide to update their zoning codes for the legalized use of medical marijuana. Some city managers, like Glenn Nichols, who manages Benson City, said they are taking the warning seriously, and city officials all over the state have started talking about how zoning code should be set if Prop 203 ends up passing. If it does, the League of Arizona Cities and Towns said that they will give guidelines to cities, but zoning ordinances would need to be passed by March of next year to stay ahead of when the law would go into effect. Many are not convinced that the bill will pass. Prop 203 in Arizona has strict guidelines laid out in the ballot measure. Arizona would only be allowed to have 124 dispensaries, and the rules regulating them include being 500 feet away from any school, and cities will have to pass zoning regulations in preparation of businesses coming to town. The Secretary of State has said that they have received more arguments against the proposition than in favor of it. Richard Searle of the Cochise County Board of Supervisors said he doesn't think there will be a need to change any zoning laws in his city because with only 124 dispensaries allowed, he doesn't expect dispensaries to come into county land. If approved by voters, Arizona would be the 15th state to approve medical marijuana use, unless you don't count New Jersey.
Yeah, kind of hard to count New Jersey sometimes. But this Proposition 203 in Arizona, it'll be good news if we can get this passed. It makes yet another state that has legalized the sale and distribution of marijuana through a dispensary system. That's right. We've got New Mexico, Maine, Rhode Island. Who else has the regulated systems? The District of Columbia, New Jersey's going to have a regulated system. California's got a kind of semi-shadily regulated. Colorado's got regulations on the distribution of medical marijuana. Oregon is voting on it this November, and I'll talk about that more at the end of the show. So for all those naysayers out there that you hear, you know, going against Prop 19 in California saying, well, you know, there's no way that anyone's going to pay sales taxes on marijuana when it's a federal crime. They'll be admitting to breaking federal law. Always point out to them that we've already got five or six states that have mandated the buying and selling of marijuana and that are taking in sales taxes right now. And medical marijuana is no more legal than recreational marijuana. It's a red herring. Don't let them fool you with that. It is perfectly appropriate and okay for states to raise tax money off of marijuana.
The New York Times published a piece this week about the reversal of roles that occurs in aging families. Baby boomers who enjoyed cannabis culture in the 1960s and beyond are now helping their aging parents discover the benefits of using their once recreational sacrament as a medicinal panacea. People interviewed in the article shared a similar story of parents who were strict about illegal drugs when they were growing up and have softened their stance, partially due to the national acceptance of medical marijuana. One man who supplies his parents, both in their 70s, with illegal marijuana, he's in the state of New York, to ease the symptoms of aging. His father has a heart ailment, and his mother suffered dizzy spells and nausea, and both were worried about Alzheimer's disease and cancer. After looking up their own research, they collectively decided marijuana was worth a try. Now their 46-year-old son makes brownies and ginger snaps laced with cannabis every week for his parents. His mother's acceptance began with her no longer worrying that it would lead to harder drugs, as generations of governmental agencies had assured her. She still has concerns about the law, but says she would not go back to taking prescription medicine instead of a cookie, adding that her dizzy spells and nausea have receded. Although stories like this are increasing, they are still rare. Less than 1% of people over the age of 65 admit to using cannabis. Dan G. Blazer, a professor of geriatric psychology at Duke University who has studied drug abuse and abuse among older people, says that older people will turn to cannabis in greater numbers in the future as the baby boomers become our senior segment. Cannabinoids have shown promise as pain relievers, especially for pain from nerve damage, a common problem in seniors. But all doctors aren't convinced it is a good idea to turn the 70-plus set into cannabis therapies. Dr. Seddon Savage, a pain specialist and the president for the American Pain Society, says doctors should be concerned about older patients using marijuana. She says that it puts people at risk of falls, impairs cognition, impairs memory, loss of motor control, and that unsupervised use of a potent drug shouldn't be taken lightly. Dr. Savage also brings up the legal ramifications of seniors using cannabis. She says that under almost all circumstances, there are alternatives that are just as effective as cannabis. But there is a considerable range of opinions about marijuana use among pain specialists, and many are in favor of its use in therapies. For some family, marijuana was once the root of all their battles, and now in the later phase of life, it is becoming a bonding experience for many.
You know, this story always cracks me up. First of all, demographically speaking, yes, the baby boom generation is the fastest growing demographic of marijuana consumers. In about the year 2000, only 18% of people aged 50 and older had admitted to trying marijuana in their lifetime. By the time 2008 rolled around, the most recent statistics, a third, 33% of people over the age of 50, the AARP set, have used marijuana in their lifetime. And that number is only going to grow. You know, there's an old joke in the medical marijuana community that after age 50, all marijuana use is medical. And when you look at what marijuana treats, it makes a lot of sense because it treats all of the diseases of aging. You know, the aches, the pains, the arthritis, the headaches, the Alzheimer's that we find that marijuana helps so well, depression, insomnia, all these problems that are exacerbated by aging are relieved through the use of medical marijuana. Now, for these geriatric specialists to get all their panties in a wad here about older folks using medical marijuana, that's an immediate crack up to me, because my father, who's turning 69 this year, he has prescriptions that have him taking 6 Vicodin and 1 Demerol a day. So you want to lecture me about how marijuana might cause falls or a foggy brain or a lack of coordination or impairment of any kind when you got my dad on 7 major opioid painkillers a day? Come on now. We need to get senior citizens more on marijuana and less on all of these drugs that the government keeps pushing down their throats here. And especially considering that our federal government won't allow Medicare to negotiate in bulk for cheaper prescription drug prices, won't allow Medicare to import prescription drugs cheaper from Canada. You know, because the danger from the Canadian drugs, you know how those Canadians, they're so lackluster on their, lackadaisical on their drug, testing and so off. It's just ridiculous. You know, seniors are already struggling to pay the bills, and those prescription bills are almost always the biggest bill they face. They're almost always having to make the choice between groceries and prescriptions. How many seniors are untreated or undertreated, cutting their pills in half to try to make that prescription last longer? And we want to deny them the ability to grow their own medicine, to grow their own plant in their closet, to not only provide them some relief with a safe, non-toxic, effective herbal remedy, but to also to give them something to do, to give them something to put their hands into the dirt, to provide some entertainment and some something to do in their lives, to some gardening. This can be so helpful to senior citizens. It can be so helpful to people who are shut-ins, to people who don't have a lot of social contacts. And the high. You know, everybody talks about, oh, the medical marijuana, but it gets you high. The high is a benefit when you're a senior citizen. You can't go out partying. You can't go out drinking and getting all drunk and having a good time that way. But marijuana is safe enough that even the oldest, frailest patients can get some sort of relief, have a little bit of fun, and not have to break the bank trying to pay for all their prescriptions. Oh, it's time to take a break. It's 20 after the hour. Hey, everybody out there on the East Coast, happy 420 to you. We'll be right back with your Daily Toker Tunes after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Normal Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm gonna light me a pipe of inspiration. I'm gonna blow away troubles from my head. I'm gonna leave this plastic place to your plastic beaveries. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place instead.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers in Des Moines, Iowa. America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, now available on iTunes and CD, baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey now, fellow Marijuana Nation citizens. Grateful Dread here in the studios of Grateful Dread Public Radio in Summit, New Jersey. GDPR presents diverse sounds and ideas for open minds 24 hours a day, multi-genre music and news talk programming that means something. We're here to make a better world. We hope you'll join us at gdreadradio.net. Right now I'm moonlighting as Irie Wednesday music editor for Normal Show Live and proud to help Radical Russ and the crew spread the good word about the good herb. My job here is to bring you the Irie Toker Tune each Wednesday, and today's track is one very close to this ganja girl's heart. Long kept in the background, more and more women are taking the lead in bringing the world fantastic reggae music. The righteous Mama Marjas is one example. Born in Italy, yes, Italy, La Marjas, a.k.a. Maria Germinario, writes and sings conscious reggae, dancehall, and roots music, and she shares her art with audiences in Italy, the UK, and now the US. On her 2010 Love University release, Bee Lady, she sings about important issues such as violence against women, and also pays homage to the mighty herb in this dubtastic cut, ganja. Check out Mama Marjas on MySpace, Facebook, iTunes, and right here on Normal Show Live. Take a listen. Mama Marjas and Ganja.
no kill nobody's not a crime, smoke it is naturally found. So ganja, no hope no more. Me no bum no cigarette, me no bum no coke. And sure my only cure is my ganja. Let me plant my ganja.
I'm a ganja farmer, original and professional. You can stop me, policeman or politician. Let's go to my inspiration and contribution. It's not a joke for me, no smoke, be empathy, smoke, be ring. Spend money to the drugs of the rich. Put my seed in my garden and my herbs for free. I can feel better the vibes of my music. It's magic, make me smile and sing ganja.
And let me eye touch your side. I'm a whisk go by, get me more
ganja.
No affy bone, no kill nobody's not a twice. Smoke it is not so rally flowers of
ganja.
No walk no more, me no want no cigarettes. Me no want no coke, and sure my only cure is my
ganja.
Let me plant my
ganja. It simply is a plant that I can plant it in my garden.
Plant it in my garden.
But they no one. And to my plantation, the policeman is a problem.
It's a bigger problem.
With the roadblocks, stop me in all the streets and put up on my pockets.
Put up on my machine.
So think that, plant the cali for the money. But that make it for me is written now. Stop it, stop this hypocrisy is a philosophy. A way to live me, no one go a jail. Stop it, stop to tell us of my children. If you come with conscience, you're not a public danger. These drugs and alcohol kill more than gun. Those I'll tell you say they come no longer yourself, man. Sensimania is sin, the profound river. Take the flame and bless the child wild. Ganja,
I look at you and let me eye touch your side. Have a whisper by, give me more
ganja.
No healthy bone, no kill nobody's not a crime. Smoke it is naturally flowers of
ganja.
No hope no more, me no want no cigarettes. Me no want no coke and sure my only cure is my
ganja.
Let me plant my
ganja. Day by day, grow I see it from my window. Day by day, I hope the Babylon no knock at my door. I'm a rebel and protect my plantation. It's my mission, my work, my motivation.
From the beginning of the creation, there was awesome, the tomb of King Solomon. This only plan lives and not only Jamaica. Babylon try to monitor TV to them, but the system screams,
stop it, stop this hypocrisy is a philosophy. A way to live, me no one go a jail. Stop it, stop to tell us of my children. If you stop be conscience, you're not a public danger. Sanctity drugs and alcohol kill more than gun. Cause I'll tell you, say they can no longer yourself, man. Sensei Mina is saying, the profound river. Take the claim and bless the child wild.
Ganja, I love this so. Let me eye touch your side. Have a whisper by, give me more.
Ganja.
No affy bone, no kill nobody's not a crime, smoke it is not a rally flowers of
ganja.
No hope no more, no hope no more. No cigarettes, no hope no coke, and sure my only cure is my
ganja.
Let me plant my
ganja.
Want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs, or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now here's your dose of cannabis science.
Welcome back, everyone. 30 after the hour, and we're getting Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the line. I want to remind you that you can call in. Our phone number is 971-533-7111. That's 971-533-7111. I did have a couple of people call in earlier, but we weren't ready for you yet. You got to wait until we get to this segment. Also, you can ask your questions via chat. Just go to our chat window at stickem.com/normalshowlive. Ask your questions, and it helps if you preface it with the word question. Cannabis Carrie will get those questions over to us in the chat line, and we will ask them of Dr. Mitch. And joining us now on the telephone, Dr. Mitch Earlywine from Albany. Dr. Mitch, welcome back.
Hooray, I'm so glad to be back.
We're glad to have you. How was your week last week?
We had a great time. I went to Binghamton to give a talk, spreading the word about the vaporizer and just finding out how lots of folks are interested but don't seem to know as much about marijuana as our usual listeners. So we all need to make sure other folks are learning what we know.
Yeah, we've got the best informed audience in the world, and a lot of that is thanks to you, Dr. Mitch, coming here every week and answering our questions. Before we start with the questions, we always take the first part of the segment to address any new studies or facts or stories that have come out that tripped your alerts. So anything new, Dr. Mitch?
Yeah, unfortunately, in the American Journal of Psychiatry, there's a new article of a single case about somebody who was a medical marijuana user who was at risk for a psychotic disorder and apparently did have some psychotic symptoms after using medicinally. We've said time and time again that, you know, this is obviously, you know, not a medication for just anyone, the same for, you know, any other medication. And, you know, if you've got a schizophrenic identical twin, if you've been hearing voices and something like that, by all means, please, you know, turn to other medications for your troubles. But it kind of breaks my heart to see a single case get so much coverage in you know, a very prominent journal when, in fact, there's so much better work we could be reporting.
Yeah, it always seems to be the case when we look at the mainstream media or some of these journals that might have an anti-cannabis bias where, you know, good news will come out with study after study after study, and they'll say, oh, well, you know, we need more study. But if bad news comes out with one case, oh boy, they're all over that, aren't they?
Exactly, and it's just an unfortunate product of the bias, and we're going to just have to speak all the louder and make sure we spread the word that, you know, this is not something that's justifying over 800,000 arrests a year.
Exactly. And, you know, I was watching in on the chat room earlier today before the show started, and somebody was chatting about the DARE officer having come to their child's school, and their child kept interrupting the DARE officer and asking questions, you know, that basically, you know, pointed out that he was lying. And now their kid's in trouble, and they've got to go to the principal and talk about it. So the truth is getting out there, I guess, Dr. Mitch.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that the kids are speaking up about this, but it really burns my ass that somebody got in trouble for doing so. And if they want to write me or have me email the principal or send that principal a copy of Understanding Marijuana, by all means, let me know.
That's a great idea, folks. If you want, if you're still in the chat room, I don't even know who it was that was talking about it, but you want to get email from Dr. Mitch or email to Dr. Mitch, the email address is 420research@gmail.com. Okay, we've got a few questions that have percolated up from the chat, so let's get right to them. We have a question. Can you explain why cannabis seems to enhance my hand and eye coordination for things like video games and playing instruments, even though it's been said that cannabis should cause a deficit in those motor functions?
This is not always the answer people want to hear, but the answer to this question is often intoxicated practice. Hmm. It's funny how if you play an instrument high a lot, something about being high and playing that instrument is classically conditioned until you actually find cues from the intoxication are an inherent part of how you learned to play, and you do see these kinds of enhancements. And the video game data, although they are not published, people are quite effusive about this, particularly my friends with mild subclinical ADHD symptoms. Man, they get a sativa in them, and suddenly they are killing all the aliens on the planet Mongo.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hear that from video gamers all the time. They say they do so much better when they've been using cannabis, but, you know, if you've been practicing while high, you're probably going to do well while high as well. All right, we've got a live call coming in here from the 229 area code. 229, what's your question for Dr. Mitch?
Yes, I was wondering if he could talk about his thoughts on depression and cannabis.
Good question. Depression and cannabis.
I'd be delighted to discuss this. As I've mentioned in the past, I'm not a big fan of pharmacological treatments for depression. I feel like 3 months of hard work with a good therapist, or even a few months of work on your own with one of the self-help treatment guides. The book Feeling Good is great. Some of those based on acceptance and commitment therapy are really superb. Nevertheless, I do not feel that cannabis is a cause of depression, and it's put me at odds with a number of clinicians both here in town and across the nation. They often say, oh, when my clients use cannabis, it just makes their depression worse, or I think it makes their depression last longer. But, of course, these are people who went in for therapy in the first place. If cannabis had helped their depression, they wouldn't be coming in for therapy. So it's not my main line of defense. I know there are people who really swear by it, that it helps their depressive symptoms. But all in all, I'd really rather see folks move to a cognitive behavioral therapy approach.
Okay. Arctic Bob has a question. What is the difference between Marinol, the dronabinol pill, and an oil concentrate, like when people make hash oils or the Rick Simpson's oil? I mean, other than the fact that one's synthetic and it's only THC, what are some of the differences between the dronabinol pills and the oils that people are making with cannabis?
So, in fact, you hit right there on what the key is. Synthetic THC is the only cannabinoid in dronabinol, and so you do not get any of the potential benefits that you would get from the other cannabinoids, in particular cannabidiol. So dronabinol can be extremely discombobulating cognitively because you don't have any cannabidiol. It's sort of taking the edge off that pure synthetic THC. The oils that people make at home or any of the other, you know, elixirs that they can make from soaking cannabis in alcohol or tinctures like those lines have all the cannabinoids in the plant, as well as some flavonoids and terpenoids that we, you know, are still learning about. And so it's got many of the benefits of the whole plant that you just simply cannot find in a single synthetic version of only one cannabinoid.
Mm-hmm. And question, I'm going to follow up on that one. Is there any other pharmacological drug, anything in the pharmacopoeia, where the more concentrated version is less strictly regulated than the raw plant material?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Nothing's coming to mind right immediately. I was thinking willow bark, which is what aspirin is made of, maybe the only one, but it's just because there's not a big market for willow bark. People would rather take an aspirin. But no, generally that's very much the deal. So if you've got a more concentrated version, that's usually, you can buy the regular plant, and the concentrated version is more regulated. Yeah. Here we've got the complete ass backwards arrangement.
Yeah. I guess maybe, opium poppies versus processed morphine, you know, opium poppies being Schedule 1, processed morphine Schedule 2, maybe something like that.
Well, and the interesting about that is if you grow Papaver somniferum but don't actually go out and harvest the heads and make cuts on the sides and stuff like that, it actually is not necessarily legal but not enforced in a lot of states. So, yeah, it's a very gray area.
All right. We got a live call coming in now from the 510 area code. 510, what's your question for Dr. Mitch? Hello, caller. You're on the air. Okay, having some problems getting the caller in. Go ahead and try and call back in. We'll get you on when we can. We've got some also some questions here from the chat room, so let's go on this one. Can you touch on marijuana for morning sickness in the early stages of pregnancy? I guess the health benefits or risks, and maybe even the legal risks.
So, sad to say, there are states where women who test positive for cannabinoids during pregnancy can be put at least at risk, if not prosecuted, for child endangerment, which I find absolutely offensive in so many ways I don't even know where to begin. But the sad thing is this is discouraging women from actually getting ideal prenatal care, which is a horrible, horrible arrangement. The data on marijuana use in pregnancy, Marlene Mothry's data suggests there really isn't a big negative consequence. She studied folks in the Caribbean. One study here in the U.S. suggests that prenatal use can be problematic as far as leading to ADHD symptoms, attention deficit symptoms at age 10, but they failed to control for attention deficit symptoms in the moms. And so I really don't know if it's just that their sample of marijuana users during pregnancy actually had ADHD in the first place and passed it on to the kids, or did the cannabis exposure really actually lead to that? In contrast, really severe morning sickness early in pregnancy can be incredibly detrimental to the fetus and really put the whole pregnancy at risk. And it seems like a small amount of cannabis shouldn't be a big problem, but Americans are just so freaked out about pregnancy and fetuses, as we can see from all the abortion insanity that's around, that we just can't even come right out and say that. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity to gather good data on this is impaired because people are unwilling to even say, oh, yes, by the way, I did use cannabis during pregnancy.
Okay, we're going to try to get our caller back on the line from the 510 area code. What's your question for Dr. Mitch?
What's up, Russ? This is Roland J.
Hey, Jay.
I was trying to find out about John's transplant. I was wondering if there was any studies about any form of cannabis helping him out.
Okay, and of course, Dr. Mitch, you know our engineer Ganja John. He got his kidney. There was a young man in Tennessee, 30 years old, who died of a cocaine overdose. Actually, had an aneurysm, brain exploded. Basically, he was brain dead. But of course, the organs were fine. They harvested both kidneys, both lungs, liver, corneas. I mean, this man's death has led to life for five, six other people, including our own Ganja John. He got the transplant. It's a 6 out of 6 antigen match, this kidney. He did have a blood clot they had to deal with, and he had some pain problems, but he's doing okay otherwise. So what's the prognosis as far as John's cannabis use in the past having any problems with this kidney transplant taking hold?
It's first of all, all my best blessings to John and great thoughts, because I'm just delighted to learn of this. And when he first put it on Facebook, I was just jumping up and down with joy. The clincher here is what a great match. And this is an incredible miracle of science that we can do this at all. And in fact, cannabis would be essentially unrelated to the success of this transplant. As you can see, this is from a guy who's clearly a heavy cocaine user, right? This is not the issue. And as long as John is keeping his health up in other ways, he's going to be doing fine. I think his opportunity to decrease other pain meds is going to be superb if he's using cannabis. And in fact, cannabis is not a plant that's hard on the kidneys. That blood clot was a hassle, and I know that had to require additional surgery, but I'm still really optimistic for John, and I think this is going to be a great way for him to improve his quality of life.
Oh, yeah, we are looking forward to his return. We're hoping to have him back for the election on November 2nd. We're going to road trip down to Oakland and bring you live coverage of Prop 19 and all the election coverage from the Prop 19 headquarters. We're still working out the details, but it looks like we'll be able to do that. He should be back by then. So if you're listening, Ganja John, we miss you, and we wish you the best of health. All right, time for a couple more questions here with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany. Big Doug Blacksmith wants to know, if pain is relative, can any doctor accurately judge how much pain you deal with?
In fact, this is a big problem in all of the pain literature. And so because pain is inherently subjective, we do see some correlates of it clinically and can often, use those ideas to try to detect people who are malingering, who are making things up and things along those lines. But with that in mind, it sort of lets us know that we've got to trust a patient's self-report on pain. And, in fact, that's been a problem nationally for folks who prescribe opiates and for folks who are eager to use cannabis for its analgesic pain-killing properties. But it also lets us know that given that subjectivity and variation, there are a lot of lifestyle changes that can help pain that have nothing to do with pharmacopoeia at all, like stress reduction, good sleep, keeping your stimulant consumption like caffeine and nicotine to an absolute minimum, and just making sure you schedule your life so that you get the kind of rest and relaxation that you need. And then what a surprise, pain does tend to dissipate. So.
Yeah, I pain is so undertreated in this country, and we have such an epidemic of doctors that are terrified to accurately prescribe for their patients because of fear of the DEA, fear that, you know, they're just helping people who are drug seekers. It's such a shame, and I believe that legalizing cannabis could go a long way toward alleviating that because doctors would have another option, something that's not so harmful or addictive as some of these other pain drugs. Would you agree with that?
Particularly when you think about how quickly we develop tolerance to the opiates and how cannabis could help folks minimize their opiate use so they wouldn't develop tolerance so quickly, and we don't develop tolerance to cannabis's analgesic effects as fast, in part because their best analgesic effects are at a moderate dose, not at a high dose. So it's a delightful drug as far as that's concerned, and I think one we're really missing out on because of prohibition.
Yeah. Okay, got a great question here from Philosa Weed, who says, I have weaned myself off of the meds for my bipolar disorder over the past year, and I've supplemented this with herb. I feel better and I'm more social. Have you heard of other reports of people with bipolar, you know, exchanging their bipolar meds for cannabis and getting success like that?
Believe it or not, Lester Gretzky's been talking about this since the 1970s, but every time people bring it up at psychiatric conferences, everybody freaks out. I think there's a subset of folks who, particularly because they use too high a dosage of cannabis, they can't seem to maintain this. Bipolar disorder, particularly the mania episodes, do tend to ebb and flow, and so they say, oh, it's just you're in between, you know, it's not really working. But if it's been a year, my God, how long do you have to go before people really believe it? I would try to help this person ensure that they can get the same strain regularly and to keep dosage to as little as possible to keep symptoms under control. And otherwise, you know, congratulations to you. And as soon as you notice your sleep going awry or any manic symptoms creeping in, by all means, don't be averse to returning to lithium. But I do know it's got some side effects that are certainly nowhere near as cool as the ones that come from cannabis.
That's right. Okay, we have time for one more question. But for those of you who didn't get your questions answered on the air, you can always email Dr. Mitch Earlywine at 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. We'll end with this question. Is marijuana or any other synthetic marijuana a better substitute for muscle relaxers like Soma and some of those other heavy muscle relaxants?
Individual differences on all those drugs are so vast that it's impossible to say universally one's better than the other. But as far as developing tolerance rapidly, weird stomach upset and some other side effects, cannabis and the cannabinoid drugs have a lot better potential than some of the ones you mentioned. And some of the ones that used to be popular that had a much higher addictive potential. So I do feel like, particularly if cannabis is working for you, by all means, that would be the one to turn to, rather than some of these prescription meds, particularly if they're creating side effects that you're finding aversive.
All right. Great answers, as always, Dr. Mitch. We appreciate you joining us here every Wednesday on our Cannabis Science segment, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us.
Looking forward to it. Bye now.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers.
He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 50 after the hour. And, you know, we've been talking about California's Prop 19 a whole bunch. We're less than 3 weeks away from the election. But, you know, all the talk about Prop 19 has overshadowed three other states that are voting on marijuana this election cycle. Of course, the state of Arizona, as mentioned earlier, with Proposition 203 to legalize medical marijuana. The state of South Dakota has an initiative to legalize medical marijuana. And right here in my own home state of Oregon, we have Measure 74. Measure 74 is the Oregon Regulated Medical Marijuana Supply System, a.k.a. dispensaries. That's right, just north of California, we are voting on legalizing nonprofit dispensaries here in our state. And I wanted to address the Oregonian. The Oregonian is the state's largest newspaper, headquartered here in Portland, and they issued their editorial on this, which said, "No on Measure 74, a free-for-all on pot." Oh no, a free-for-all on pot. You know, unlike now, when anybody who wants pot can get it. Okay. But the Oregonian, what is very telling in this article is how they frame the argument. They say, you know, if the main impact of Measure 74 was to improve the access of very sick people to medical marijuana, Oregon voters could support the initiative with enthusiasm. And basically right there, they're seeding the medical marijuana argument. They're basically saying, yeah, we've got medical marijuana. Everybody likes medical marijuana. And we all agree that the system we have now with no dispensaries, something we call the Mother Teresa system, doesn't work. The way it works here in Oregon is that a registered patient can have a caregiver and a grower. And caregiver is usually a spouse or someone that lives with them. And then a grower, somebody to grow their medical marijuana for them. But the way this is worked out is that under the law, the patients can have up to 6 mature plants, 18 seedlings, and a pound and a half of medicine, 24 ounces of medicine. And that the plants and the medicine are the property of the patient. It's written out in the law that they are the property of the patient. So someone who is a grower for a medical marijuana patient, they don't own those plants. They don't own that marijuana. They are caretakers of someone else's marijuana. And the way that it's supposed to work is that the patient, you know, gets themselves a grower, the grower supplies the medicine to the patient, and the patient reimburses the grower for supplies and utilities. But what is also very specific about the Oregon law is no reimbursement for labor. So these growers are expected to, out of the kindness of their hearts, put all their time and effort into taking care of the marijuana, chopping down the marijuana, doing the trimming, dealing with the mites and all the things that can go wrong in a marijuana garden, and yet not get reimbursed for their labor. Now, the intent of that is understandable. The intent was, we want to have a medical marijuana system, but we don't want to see this turned over to the black market. We don't want to enrich drug dealers, as they're called by the mainstream media and so on. But actually, that's what's happened. That's what's happened under this Mother Teresa model, is that you've created 36,000 people in the state of Oregon who are legal to have a pound and a half, who have nowhere to get it from. Most of the people in the state of Oregon who are patients do not have a grower, or they designate themselves as their grower because they're, by law, they have to designate a grower and a grow site wherever it's going to be, even if they don't grow. So when the state comes out and tells you there's X number of grow sites, that's on paper, folks. The real number of grow sites is actually quite small. And the other unintended consequence of the way our Mother Teresa model works is that it enriches the black market growers. I cannot tell you how many times I have talked to people, patients here in the state of Oregon, who call Normal or talk to people that I know and ask, well, I've got this grower lined up and he says that he can get me an ounce a month for $300. Yeah, an ounce a month for $300. When this guy is growing 6 mature plants and harvesting a whole lot more than 24 ounces, somehow only 1 ounce gets back to the patient, And the reimbursement for that's $300. That's some pretty expensive pots and pretty expensive lights and electricity and soil and water if we're truly reimbursing you for your supplies. In fact, I've done the math on this. And I found that you can grow indoors under the Oregon law. You can grow indoors and produce for about $40 to $60 an ounce. You know, depending on, you know, what part of the state you live in, what your electric bills are, and so forth. And that's indoors, folks. Not outdoors. Outdoors, it's far cheaper than that. So for these growers in the state to be raking over the coals these patients for black market money is just sickening. And that's why it is so important that we vote yes on Measure 74, that we create a dispensary system and we regulate this. And, you know, the concerns by the Oregonian and those who are opposed to this. And by the way, in the voter's pamphlet, we do vote by mail, right? So we've already gotten our voter's pamphlet sent out to us. There are 9 arguments in favor of 74 and only 2 opposed. Also, the Citizens Review Board, we have a Citizens Review Board here in the state of Oregon, a panel of 24 independent citizens who review these initiatives and give it a thumbs up, thumbs down. That won 13 to 11. Close vote. But the citizens of Oregon, as represented by that panel, supported it 13 to 11. Now, here are some of the things that they're complaining about. Number one, they complain that there's no limit in Measure 74 as to the number of dispensaries that could exist. And they bring up the old cities in California and Colorado with restrictions this loose have found themselves overwhelmed with more dispensaries than Starbucks coffee shops. Oh, no. Why is it always Starbucks they pick on? Why not McDonald's? I don't know. But anyway, why is that scary? Why is it scary to some people that there might be more dispensaries than Starbucks? I mean, I'm really more scared of there being more McDonald's, considering America's health and obesity epidemic. But really, why is it scary? If it's a regulated shop, if it's a place where only adults can go into, where they're carded and they have to show ID, where they have to be registered medical marijuana patients. And remember, we're not talking California where you can go skate down Venice Beach, go into some dock in a tent for $40, complain about your headaches or you can't get to sleep and walk out with a card that day and run to the dispensary and buy yourself a pound. That ain't going to happen here. The problems we've seen in California and Colorado are, and now Michigan, are directly attributable to lack of regulation. They said in California that collective cultivation was okay, but they never described how it was going to be supplied, and they never described how it was going to be run as far as the commerce goes. Measure 74 takes care of that. All of the dispensaries must be nonprofit organizations. They must pay 10% of their gross proceeds every quarter to the state. The Measure 74 is completely self-funded, and the legislative analysis says that it could raise anywhere from $400,000 to $3 million a year for a program that's only going to cost $400,000 to $600,000 to implement. Measure 74 has written into it scientific exploration, medical research on cannabis by the state of Oregon. We will actually finally take a look at these 36,000-odd patients who've been using this wonderful medicine for the past, 12 years, and we'll finally start asking them some questions like, hey, did it really work for you? We'll do some real tests and find out about this stuff. The other thing they complain about here is, and this is in the Oregonians' complaints about Measure 74, is that the employees and directors of the dispensaries wouldn't have to be law-abiding Oregon citizens. They could be drug dealers moving in from other states. Well, Measure 74 actually has a prescription in it that says you cannot run a dispensary if you have a violent felony in the past 5 years, or if you have a illegal drug distribution felony after this law is passed, and that provides a 5-year limit on that as well. Which to me sounds a whole lot better than what it is now, where anybody can come into the state, anybody from any state with any record, and start selling to patients. Right now, that's what's happening. I mean, I love these people always want to put the blinders on and pretend that it's not going on, but black market deals for patients are going on right now. Patients are being taken advantage of by these unscrupulous growers, and who knows whether they have felony records? Who knows how they're growing? Who knows whether they're using pesticides? Who knows whether they're keefing the buds before they get them out to the patients? We don't know because it's unregulated. You can wish all you want to put the genie back in the bottle, but medical marijuana is here to stay. And if it is here to stay, and as the Oregonian admits that we need to have better access to medical marijuana, why not Vote yes on 74 and regulate that. Create jobs for Oregonians. Create a state system that will fund itself and provide extra revenue for other state government budgets. It's a win-win-win situation for everybody. Check out Yes4 74. That's YESFOR74.com or .org. I forget which. But Measure 74 in Oregon. Look it up. Vote for it. It's time for dispensaries. I'm Radical Russ for Cannabis Carry and everybody here at the Normal Foundation. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. You're growing, you're trying.